Welcome to Dugout Study Hall, a remedial course in baseball stats and proud member of the Pitcherlist Podcast Network. I'm your host and expert layman, Matt Goodwin, and I am joined, as almost always, by your fake baseball economist, Alexander Chase. On this episode, we will be discussing the hope of a new year, the idea of a two-city split for a Major League Baseball franchise, left on base percentage and other important metrics, and taking a look at regression, both the kind you want to see and the kind you don't. And, of course, it would not be an off-season baseball podcast in 2022 without talking a little bit about the CBA as well. But before we get to all of that, Alexander, how you doing?
You know, new year, new me, or something like that. How about yourself?
Well, there's a lot for me to talk about. I don't know if you want to pull at that thread. We'll be here for the full hour just talking about what's new in my life. I'll give you the TLDR. Last week, we welcomed our new son into the world, our baby boy, our third child. So things in the Goodwin house are a little hectic. If y'all hear a baby crying in the background, that is not me subtly trying to add sound effects to improve the listenability of the pod. That's real life potential crying baby in the background. But my wife is graciously working hard to keep him quiet while we do this. So that's the biggest news in the Goodwin household.
That seems like a whole lot more than I could possibly bring to this discussion about like actual new year. There is no actual new mini me around my household or anything like that. As far as I know, at least.
I think you'd know. I suspect yeah. You would know.
You're right. You're right. I met my brother's newborn son over Christmas break, and the discussion was pretty exclusively whether or not he looks like me. And, you know, I don't think that's quite the same as what you have going on.
But oh, mine definitely looks like me.
Well, that's good. Good.
I may yawn a few times as we move through this, or you might hear my face hit the desk in front of me. This is going to be a new frontier for our podcast over the next several weeks, but the good news is that we're going to be here with you for those next several weeks and into the preseason and then on into the regular season. Programming note, we are going to be back weekly, I believe, the week of February 6th, whatever the Friday is of that week. So things are ramping up. We're getting ready for baseball season to come back. We have to talk about the weather, though, before we move into anything else, as it's contractually obligated. And on top of it, D.C., had some weather. So talk to me a little bit about what happened there, besides what we might already know about the people who had to spend like 36 hours in their cars at 26 degrees on I-95.
Yeah, my good friend Tim Kaine definitely had a different experience than I did. I was not trapped on I-95 heading northbound somewhere around Stafford, Virginia. Did not happen to me. I would never. We got somewhere in the realm of about 9 inches on Monday. That was supposed to be the day that I was supposed to fly back from California, and we had canceled that trip and gotten back into DC early because of like COVID stuff. And mm-hmm. I have never felt smarter in my life than coming back early and not.
And you say a lot of smart things, so that's very fortuitous that you beat that storm back. We got a little bit of weather this week, too. Actually, I was in the hospital, obviously, with the newborn baby, and we had some ice, and then we were trying to get out of the hospital as quickly as possible to beat a snowstorm, which, as you can imagine, is kind of a dicey thing when you're like, hey, I'd like to take this brand new human being that's less than a day old and get the heck out of here as soon as possible. Luckily, we were able to do that. Everything checked out. Everybody was healthy and safe. Obviously, that's most important. But it's been a wild week. It's been a little bit wonky up here for not just for us, but especially, I think, in this house, too. All right. How about we talk a little baseball? What do you say about that?
I think I'd be okay with that. Yeah.
We made it to baseball in under 5 minutes. I think that's admirable, especially for us.
Yeah.
So in terms of the new year, what are some of the things that you are looking forward to, hopeful for, excited about? And you know, we'll try and put that baseball spin because that's, you know, what people are listening.
You know, if you're asking me to be hopeful and kind and nice and forward looking, I'm going to say the word CBA in a nice voice. I don't.
What is that? I don't think we've talked about that before.
Yeah. We definitely have had the chance maybe to think about it at some point over the past couple months, we, I hope, have less time to think about it. And that's really my hope, is that that like date that like some people like Jeff Passan have warned, or somewhere around Valentine's Day is like when we should actually be warned. As we get closer to that, I would like to just like not have to worry, because there are meetings and people are saying nice things and all of the Scoops reporters are scooping out details of a potential CBA. Like, you know, they're minor league players who are being signed up just like to meaningless deals. Like, that's the sort of Scoops reporting I'm looking for and manifesting. So not meaningless, but you know, we're currently getting all sorts of details about guys that I really would like to have the opportunity to play some Major League Baseball next year. And yeah, that's what I'm manifesting. But I have like no specific positive saying them out loud thoughts on that, because I just have like ejected it from my brain. And that's been a really nice thing to start the year. It's just like actually, I'm letting it live outside myself.
Yeah, it's probably the best thing to do with something that is kind of a drag. You know, if it, sometimes I think you do need to just separate yourself, and it doesn't mean you're apathetic about it. It just means for your own well-being, thinking about things that upset you all the time is not super great for, you know, your own physical and mental health. I do think it makes a lot of sense that we haven't heard anything, and that the two sides aren't really talking yet, because it's really easy to stare down a car that's coming straight at you when it's 2 miles away. You know, there's no real need for them to be in any kind of hurry or you know, show their hand, or there's just no pressure yet. So it's not at all surprising that we haven't. It's just, I wish it would kind of just get off the to-do list so that we can focus on the baseball part.
Yeah, I kind of feel like it's the little speck on the horizon that's not moving. It's not big enough to seem like it's about to hit us, but coming out. So yeah, I've shelved that, and I'm mostly trying to think about like the sort of like silly and frivolous things that I'm hoping for in this new year. Did you know, for example, that last year Juan Soto had a 0.999 OPS? So what I'm looking forward to in this new year,
OPS. Okay,
so I'm looking for Juan Soto to have an OPS of over 1,000. Is that dumb and frivolous enough for you? That's what I'm manifesting in this new year.
Yeah, well, that's going to lead us right into our regression talk for later, right?
Yeah, he has to regress upward, right?
0.0001. Yeah. You know, every year it's nice to kind of think about what's coming. You know, I've said this 1,000 times. I live in New England. And we do have a lot of seasonal change. And so, like, we're right in the middle of, more towards the beginning, I guess. But we're in the winter season. And, you know, things are a little gray and things are a little cold. We had snow. It's nice to think about what's going to be coming in a few months when spring hits and it's baseball season and we can get back outside. And, you know, obviously with all of these things that have been going on for the last couple of years for health and safety wise and different versions of the of COVID and all of the things swirling around that, my big hope for 2022 is that we are going to finally get to that next rung on the ladder of our new normal. I don't think it's ever going to be exactly what it was before. But I do really feel like we have, it's achievable within the next 6 months. And that's my big hope. And, yeah. And in terms of like baseball, that means like very easily being able to go see baseball games and feeling comfortable, maybe finding a minor league game that I can take my 5-year-old to, you know, and show her baseball in person for the first time. Those are the kinds of things that I'm really hopeful for, because they're so important and they've been so absent. So, you know, having those constants in your life is really important. Baseball, for obviously for us and for anybody listening, is probably one of those things that has been a constant in our lives for a long, long time. So all of those things, that's what I'm really hopeful for.
Yeah. I mean, I always think as we have that sort of discussion, it's like, what things am I happy to leave behind? People blowing on birthday cakes, pretty okay with having any
it's
of that in this year.
Probably not something we should have been doing anyway.
Yeah, you know, I want more, let's say, dudes who barely throw fastballs. I think that'd be a fun thing if I have to, like, I want, like, a starting pitcher to, like, have a fastball usage of under, like, 25%. I want no birthday cake candles. I'd like... Well, I actually had a couple of good opportunities to drink my preferred 25-ounce Budweiser in Nats Park, but I'd like some more of those. you know, I feel like right now I'm not necessarily going to say I'm like hopeful or anything because I don't default to that. But there are a lot of little things that I'm happy to be hopeful for. And it's a fun place to be, especially because it's all off in the future and it's really cold outside right now. So it's just like, you know, it's nice again, to think about. It's all the little speck on the horizon at this point in this early year.
Sure. All right. What do you say we do a little pass fail here to kick things off like in for reals?
Oh, yes. Okay. And I guess I have to take off that optimism hat now, don't I?
Well, that depends upon your outlook on the idea of the Rays playing half of their home games in Tampa Bay and half of their home games in Montreal, which is this, I'm sure everybody has heard at this point, this two-city plan for the Rays. I have a feeling I know what you're going to say about this, but I'm going to let you go.
So I want to actually, like, before I get too far into this, do you actually think that they'll ever play baseball in two different home parks in the same calendar year, like on purpose?
I mean, aside from having to, like what they did with the Blue Jays or, you know, stuff like that. I don't know. I don't think anything is out of the realm of possibility if there's, this is going to sound cynical, but if there's money to be made or it's to the benefit of the decision makers, right? This isn't up to, you know, the middle relievers of the Tampa Bay Rays. You know, this is up to baseball and
that they get
to
choose owner, to do.
Yeah, right. And ownership and all of that. So if there's a benefit, I wouldn't say that there's anything they wouldn't do if they felt that there was some sort of a benefit to doing it. I mean, do you want me to tell you whether I think this is a good idea before you go?
You know, I think the question I have is not like whether or not I think it's a good idea, because I almost think that's like not the question that we should be asking. It's the one they want us to ask. But I don't think that's actually like the terms they're playing in. And I think that's why. So this report came out the other day. Report's probably the word. It was like a open letter op-ed signed by like 40 business leaders in the Tampa Bay area. They're like, no, we're in favor of this. Please get this team out of our city for half of the year or whatever, which is just such a bizarre stance. And it's so like on its face kind of stupid that you like can't help but like dig under the surface a little bit. And you're like, you're gonna, like, most people on this list are like people in like the property development world and people who could reasonably stand to make money on some sort of plan where they tell the city of Tampa Bay, hey, we promise we'll stay half time if you throw some money at our park. And, you know, same sort of people are also saying to the city of Montreal, hey, we'll come to your city half time if you'll throw some money at a park. And eventually down the line, they're just kind of like trying to play two sides for suckers. It's very clearly like not a matter of being good for Tampa Bay or the Rays. It's probably a matter of it's good for like the idea of like, you know, like every other team turning their baseball team into a real estate apparatus or whatever. So like, it's just like this really magically stupid version of this though. And I just can't help but find it funny. And we'll see how many more people kind of take this sort of stuff at face value. But I think this is a nice sort of inflection point of, no, they're really serious about this. They're really trying to round people up. So, I mean, I'm not failing the idea. I'm just saying like failing of the execution of their attempt wash over it.
I mean, they're going to surprise us all when they go to Nashville instead. Right.
That seems smarter, right?
It seems smarter to find a market that is going to support a team rather than trying to split time between two markets that have proven historically cannot really support a team over the long haul. There's a reason that the Expos are now the Nationals, you know, and so I don't know. It's just it seems odd. And like you said, to your point, it seems odd enough that you really gonna want to look at what it is that's kind of going on there. But here's the other piece of this, and it is something that we've talked about a lot and whatever. It's worth saying again. Major League Baseball teams, in terms of cash flow, there's a lot of juice in the orange that doesn't really have to do with what we see and hear and talk about in terms of where the money is coming from. We see ticket sales. We see merch. We see TV deals. Did I say ticket sales? Concessions. Those are the things that as fans we see and experience, right? But there's a whole lot more that's the tip of the iceberg in terms of how people who own baseball teams make money and generate money and gain wealth. And so to me, this just feels like somewhere along the line, somewhere beneath the surface of the water, this is an opportunity to make money. So my concern is, if there is a way for the owner of the Rays to increase some sort of business flow, cash flow thing that's beyond my comprehension, or at least isn't out in the open enough for me to be able to see and understand, does that then incentivize another team in a similar market or even a slightly larger market to start doing those same things? And now I think I know this sounds like a slippery slope argument because it is, but you know, I don't know that that's what you want. Do you even want three or four teams doing this? I don't know. I think it stinks for fans of the team, and ultimately, it feels like the fans of the team are always at the bottom of the pyramid, and really, without the fans of the team, there's nothing. So, I don't know. That's where I guess I look at this. And the glass is definitely half empty for me. So I don't like it just from the point of view that it feels icky. And I don't, maybe it's not, but it feels like it is.
So one of the, like, the larger scale things that, you know, now that we have our optimism hat off and I don't have to like say nice New Year's resolution-y things, I'm really hoping that the Tampa Bay Rays are just like the biggest losers of the CBA and that all of the rules essentially just nuke their way of life. Because nobody really benefits from it. Like, all the things they do well, they could and would have to continue to do well if all of the things they take advantage of were no longer on the table. And, you know, like, they would still be much better at getting people to be good at pitching. They would still be much better at, like, minor league, like, talent identification and things like that. They just wouldn't be able to get away with trying to win while not spending any money. And then they'd probably have to spend some money. So, like, I don't think there's any real argument that's like we're protecting small market teams when we're enabling them to spend considerably less than they're capable of. So the idea of them probably making some other owners a little bit angry that they're doing something so, like, just out there stupid crazy can't help their case whenever they, among all of the other, like, ownership groups, have to squabble over whatever they want to be, like, the things that they're, like, arguing for. And I would really love to see a world where, like, you know, Fenway Sports Group or whatever they're called and whoever else, you know, says, actually, your chair's not that big. We're going to argue for this because it'll make us more money. And, you know, I don't care if that means you lose five fewer games next year, or you win five fewer games next year. So that's my hope. I'm hoping that all of this just is like a dramatic overplay of their hand in some, like, some cosmic way. I don't know that'll happen, but that is sure, that's my hope.
Yeah. Well, let me float this idea, and you tell me if you think I'm nuts. Do you think that the Players Association would step in? I mean, obviously, depending upon what the new CBA says, would you, if you're a player, do you want this? Do you want your, do you want three splits? Do you want home park one, home park two, and away? Do you want, I don't know. Like, I feel like there's a lot of variables here with all of this that could conceivably hurt players. And I don't know that the players would go for, I mean, would the Players Association even be able to have a say in this, or is this just something that can be done separate from them? Do you know?
I 1,000% guarantee that this is already being used as leverage by them. I 1,000% guarantee that they would have no shot at signing any free agents. Not that they're really trying that hard, but, like, they would have no ability to get people to sign. And a lot of players would not even want to be traded there. Yeah, it's not just travel. It's like the idea is, like, part of the year you live in one city, and then summer hits, and you move to a different country.
Well, right.
And then what happens during the playoffs? Like, it's just really stupid.
Are you getting paid in American dollars or Canadian dollars?
Or Dogecoin?
I mean, you know, I guess it's where,
it's,
yeah,
stupid,
right?
No matter what.
It's like the whole thing. It just feels like there's the below the surface of the water, you know, there's all of these logistics and these dominoes that fall based on doing something like that, that just complicate it to a degree that it can't possibly be worth it unless somebody is benefiting significantly from it somewhere along that food chain. Right.
Yeah. The argument, and I should quote sources because the first person I know who made this specific point is that, like, undoubtedly the team themselves, this is Craig Calcaterra's point from his Cup of Coffee newsletter this morning or on Monday, it is, they're not probably planning themselves to do this. They're just hoping that they can string people along quick enough that at some point when they both got their chips pushed halfway in, they can say, all right, the other side's ready to push them all the way in. Are you City of Tampa, if you're going to give us a full stadium, a brand new one? Because if not, we're heading to Montreal. And, like, that's got to be what it is.
Yeah.
And this is just, like, a new take on the...
But if you're doing that, don't you want to bring in a city that feels more like... I don't know, if they call your bluff, then you're like, okay, I guess we're going to Montreal. I don't know, it feels like there's a better place to make that stance I don't know.
I put it this way, the ownership group for the Tampa Bay Rays, they're not moving to Montreal.
Okay, I guess. It still doesn't seem like, in terms of, like, your leverage, I don't know. I guess that's the end of all this, right, is I don't know, but it's... I hope that it doesn't come to fruition for whatever reason, because I think it's just too wonky and weird. I mean, if you look at what the Blue Jays had to do last year because of the complications, and I mean, that was for a legitimate health and safety reason and, you know, Canadian law, all of those things that were going on, that they had to play a bunch of their home games not in their own home stadium. I don't know, it was weird. I don't know. Were you okay with that? Were you a fan of the Blue Jays situation? Was it, like, exciting? Like, I need to see this again?
No, obviously. I think also that I can just kind of, like, separate that out. It's like, any attempt to try to compare that is probably only either being made because it's just the most recent thing, or if you're trying to sell it as a good thing, it's probably in bad faith. Like, yeah, there's just no way other than that sort of, like, way of looking at things that you can, like, say, hey, remember that team that, like, didn't play in front of any fans for a bunch of the year and then played in a tiny little park and finally got to play at their home stadium and stopped living out of a hotel room, like, halfway through the year? Like, that totally didn't hurt their chances of making the playoffs. So,
I mean, they almost...
Good job to the Blue Jays.
Did, right? I mean, imagine if they didn't have to deal with all that. You win five more games and
even
playoff picture's different. You know, it's just... I don't know. It just seems very, very silly. All right. We don't need to beat that dead horse. I think we both have very clearly said, please don't do that. We are going to do a numbers of the week segment. But before we get to that, we are going to need to step away and take a very small break.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
And we are back for numbers of the week. In this case, it's number of the week, I guess, right? We're going to talk about a single number and use that as kind of a gateway to a larger conversation, Alexander.
Absolutely. I love gateway numbers. The federal government warned us about them, but I can't be stopped.
Well, Alexander putting on his rebel hat. This is something that I actually tweeted about. This is Monday we're recording, so I tweeted about this. I think it was started last night and went till this morning. And it was an interesting factoid I found as I was just clicking through Fangraphs, as one sometimes does. And that's Robbie Ray's left on base percentage, strand rate, is it's also called sometimes, was 90.1%. I have that correct, right? From my
yes,
recollection, 90.1%. Now, I'm going to tell a small story. One, because I want to shout out a buddy, Zach Blaine, He's at ZachMan285 on Twitter. Good buddy of mine, really smart baseball mind. And he told me that he was listening to our podcast last season when we brought up the fact that John Means at that time had a 100% strand rate. And that was just kind of one of those funny things that I had found so that we could talk about it in more of a light way. And he heard that and was like, okay, well, I'm going to act on that, and actually was able to kind of make a trade before John Means came back down to earth a little bit. So I think there's a lot to talk about in terms of this number. Yes, it's an extreme number. It's a huge outlier. So just to put it in context, it was the league leader among qualifiers from Fangraphs. And it was the only number. So Robbie Ray was the only pitcher among those qualifiers. So just of those 39 pitchers that qualified, it was two standard deviations above their mean for strand rate. So a significant outlier. There were only, I think, four pitchers who had a strand rate even over 80% or higher. So I guess what this leads us into is this discussion of, can you be an outlier? Can you be two standard deviations above the mean because you're two standard deviations better than the rest of the league at something? And if so, that would make it a more sustainable number. Or when you are two standard deviations above the mean, it's almost a guarantee that you're going to regress back toward that mean. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean in this one particular stat that somebody's going to be significantly worse, or they're not going to be good, or they're not going to be worth whatever. But I would certainly bet, if I was putting money down, that Robbie Ray is going to give up more runs next year because I don't think you're going to be able to strand that many people two seasons in a row. So he might be more likely to be at the top of the league because of the skill set. Is he going to be able to maintain that strand rate? I mean, you'd have to say, if you're betting the over-under at 90.1%, you have to pick the under. You have to. So I think it's an interesting discussion to just talk about how can these outliers help us? Because sometimes it feels like they're telling us a really important story, like this is now a breakout, or this was something that we want to pay attention to because this is based on skill. And the reason Vlad is two standard deviations above the mean for things is because he's two standard deviations better than everybody at hitting baseballs. Or is it the other thing? And so how do we look at regression, both people who had bad years regressing up, people who had great years maybe regressing down towards the mean? How do we know when there's going to be regression, when there's not? Make some sense of this for us, Alexander.
Okay, so I want to first really give Robbie Ray some props because, like, it's not just as crazy as you put it. It's crazier than that. I went ahead really quickly and pulled the Fangraphs leaderboard for left on base rate for all qualified pitchers in the past decade. And 2021 Robbie Ray is the only pitcher to do it in terms of 90%. Pretty much everyone else at the top of the leaderboard in like the mid upper 80s are people who like won the Cy Young, notably. Yep. So 2019 Verlander is really high. He's second. Third is 2018 Blake Snell. We've got some peak Kershaw years. Eighth, though, Robbie Ray, Arizona, 2017.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that all of the guys at the very top of the leaderboard, other than 2015 Zach Greinke, which is like a really funny name up here, and there's a Mike Fire season. Yeah, I keep looking at this. Actually, there's a Doug Fister season. Wow, this is funny. You see a lot of people who are big outliers on this who had really great seasons, but a lot of them are also guys who strike a lot of guys out.
Yeah.
And I just want to say, when you let fewer people on base, you allow yourself a little bit more room for things to be weird. I would also say separately, a lot of these guys on this leaderboard, like the strikeouts, I think do matter, because if you're allowing people on base and then immediately striking the next guy out, you're gonna create situations that are going to inflate your left on base rate. Well, on the
can
other
I just
end
jump
of-
in for one thing really, really quickly. I'm sorry to derail your train of thought. How in this case, because we've talked about this in terms of like hard hit rate, right? The same concept that if you are a pitcher who's not letting that many people get on base, is your strand rate maybe a little bit more prone to fluctuation because you have smaller samples, right? Am I saying this right?
You're on the right path, but I just wanted to say, like, let's take the idea of you have control over this and just kind of laugh it out the window a little bit.
Okay.
A lot of these guys who are exceptionally above average on this in multiple years, it's because they're just exceptionally good players playing in front of great defenses in situations that are just going to lead to this happening. Like, that's part of it. You see a lot of these guys, like, they won the Cy Young. They probably also had Gold Glove defense behind them, and they struck out a lot of guys. Those are conditions that can conspire to let you be way, way above average in a peak career year. Like,
sure.
You have to be Clayton Kershaw or Justin Verlander good, I think, in most cases, fingers crossing here, to be able to repeat this multiple times. And Robbie Ray is kind of a weird outlier in that he's them, except for when people make contact in certain prior years. So I don't know where I kind of feel about him in a lot of these ways. He's confusing to me, and that's why I think he's so interesting. That's why I wanted to bring this question back up on the pod.
Yeah.
Now, the question I have that I think is more wild is, like, if you're Robbie Ray and you actually do have some sort of science to this, like, let's say you're a different person when you have someone on base, like, you have a different pitching game plan, like, maybe that's sustainable. I know that guys with Luis Garcia for the Astros kind of acted in the opposite direction, where he was really bad pitching out of the stretch because he couldn't rock the baby.
Channel the baby energy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, like, maybe there is something to this, but we also know from, like, doing year-over-year analyses of this that it's not very sticky at all. The people fall back to earth. And, like, yeah, there are a couple things that can influence it, but we're talking, like, very little control. So a lot of the guys who have popped up here popped up once and then kind of fell back into obscurity. It's really worth paying attention to. And like, the model that I built for ERA that I'm still playing with, but I kind of trust enough to look at, has Robbie Ray as, like, a 3-3 pitcher going forward based off of this year's season being his true talent level. That's not okay. Like the
if you buy into that premise.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's not the 284, but, like, that's, like, what if we just adjusted his strikeout, walk, and hard hit numbers?
So if I gave you his over-under at 4.10, you're taking
I take the under for sure. But the other thing is, like, he's done that before. Like, Robbie Ray's been good before.
Sure, he had, and he's also had, like, a 6-7, right?
Yeah, well, he's that's the thing. Is, like, I do think that the changes he made are real-ish. That are a sure. product of actual decision making in addition to some good luck.
So I'm not, yeah. I want to be clear. I'm not knocking Robbie Ray. I don't, he's the kind of player right now for me and the type of fantasy player I am that it's hard for me to invest in just because I think his range of outcomes is pretty wide. Even if you buy into the changes he made last year, you know, it seems to be like a lot of stuff that also went right for him on top of him doing right things. I guess what he's giving us here is the opportunity to talk about or ask the question, like, is strand rate, like, it sounds like a lot of the guys that are really, really at the top of their game are going to have high strand rates because they're high strikeout. They're very effective on the mound. So when
and good
see
defense,
that,
don't forget that.
Sure. Sure. When you see that number, should that be something that signals to you that if you see that in April and May, that this is something good, or is it just whatever? That's just what has happened. Is it like a descriptive, not predictive? Does it give us any useful information? For me, it feels like the pitcher's BABIP, like not the BABIP that a pitcher gives up, but like if you look at BABIP for a hitter. This kind of feels like that, where like you look at somebody who has a high BABIP and you have to ask the question, is that because of the type of player that they are, that they're going to have a higher BABIP than you would expect? Or is it a signal that they're playing a little above their heads and they're going to come back down to earth a little bit? And I think that's a really hard thing to tell. And I guess that's my overall question. And maybe the answer is we don't know. But how would you go about trying to figure that out?
Let me make a comparison. I think that piggybacks off of your BABIP scenario. So 2020 short season, Juan Soto batted like
I know some, we know 999.
No, 2020, not 2021.
Sorry.
Yeah, so like just in the shortened season, his OPS was like 11 something. Because he batted like 360, something stupid like that. His bet maybe it was like 340, and then he had like a BABIP around 360. I think that's what it was. I'm not pulling it up. But I'm not.
The concept remains the same. That's fine.
Right. He's got the sort of skills, you know, hits the ball hard a whole lot. Left-handed, which helps a little bit for BABIP. You know, he's not super slow. And those will all conspire to give you a good baseline BABIP. And then he just had a spike season, like in terms of like rate numbers that year. I think that's kind of what we're looking at in a lot of these cases at the top of this leaderboard. There are a couple of things that in the long run you can do to give yourself a slightly better number. But there, other than that, it's just all like just tossing stuff to the wind. There are a whole lot of guys who are on these leaderboards who've had bad seasons. I don't even have to look that far to find them. And I think what the most interesting thing to say is like, what can we learn about the types of numbers that are similar to left on base rate that have a huge impact on things like ERA and WOBA, but like players don't have very much control over? What can we learn from his situation that can make it easier to analyze people who are in similar situations who maybe didn't win a Cy Young, so weren't as obviously on our radar as like pop up, maybe this isn't sustainable sort of situation? And there are a couple elements that are really obvious there. So like, you don't have to think very hard about what makes, you know, the percentage of people that you allow on base be kind of like probably pretty well tied to how many of them score usually. So if you're like wildly out of line there, probably falls back to earth. We put on out Robbie Ray. There's a couple other people who fit into like a similar, we should have them on their radar, and like, let's throw it in the other direction. So obviously we lifted him out as a guy who's a good outlier, but there's some other guys who are like the bad side outliers. Like, there's no way this repeats based off of their true talent. Aaron Nola is a really big standout in that sort of situation. Mm-hmm. And Aaron Nola had, I don't know, if you're someone like Nick Pollock who like wants to tell me about his underlying skill set, like he didn't have his best year and all of those sorts of things. But I think the way that you have to like think about that then is like, was his left on base rate really, really bad because when he had a bad day, he had a really bad day? And I think that's kind of what it was to a degree. So he's...
Right, because you're looking at season-long stuff, right? So if you have 3 days where you let eight guys on and all eight score,
mm-hmm.
that's going to have a huge impact on your math, right? Over the course.
Right.
You're looking for a median.
Yeah.
You're looking at an overall percentage, so... Yeah, that makes sense.
You don't have to be able to do the math to be able to know how the math is going to work there. So he had a 4.6 ERA, and he had, this is so funny, I'm looking at this on Fangraphs, he had a 3.37 xERA, FIP, and xFIP. So all of them agree, and I remember I ran him through my model, and he was like somewhere in that same range as well. Like, you could do the same thing for, I think, Sierra, and he's not far off from those numbers. And that's like a full run below the ERA he had last year. It's because of things like his left on base rate looking really bad because a couple blow up outings. You figure that doesn't happen, and he's probably an obvious bounce back candidate. You look at the rest of the guys who are kind of on the bottom end of this leaderboard, you know, league average here for being 75%, these are people who are below 70, and some people dramatically so. There are some interesting names. I don't know how much I buy into a Chris Paddock revival, but he had a 60% left on base rate. That is hideous and just almost unbelievable. Matt Harvey was the only player worse than him in that regard. And there's a lot of not pretty names at the bottom of this board. Like, you say, like, Eric Fed and actually Ryan Yarbrough, who's a guy I've been kind of like interested in a long time. He's at the bottom of this board. Jose Urena, Alec like Mills, like, it's icky at the bottom.
Yeah, it feels like the bottom of the board is more in line with not necessarily being a great pitcher than it is the top of the board means you're necessarily great, but those names at the top are pretty intense names. I mean, I don't want to take up our whole pod talking about this, but it's very intriguing to me because it feels like one of those things that like you could convince yourself of either thing, right? This means that he's very good or it's unsustainable and he's going to come back down to earth. And they both are scenarios that can make perfect sense.
I think if you kind of just tell yourself it's probably 20% skill and 80% luck, you're probably not far off. And I don't have those numbers on hand, but it feels like that's probably the case.
But it is going to have a huge impact on ERA.
Right. And if you can find a couple of guys who you're like, no, I can tell the real life story about what
sure.
the assumptions we typically make about, you know, being wrong here, which we can for Aaron Nola, it tells a much different story. And then if you want to take it a step further, like, he's a guy I'm sure I'll draft. But there's some other guys down here that I think are somewhat interesting in terms of, like, again, they're demonstrating some interesting skills. Like, Logan Gilbert shows up as a pretty high strikeout rate, which is an outlier for this part of the board, but he had the 17th worst season among, at this point I lowered it down to 100 innings pitched in 2021. Mm-hmm. So we get like 150 guys. So yeah, he had a really bad season in terms of left on base rate. Andrew Heaney, similar sort of situation. If you can believe that the strikeouts are real and that maybe a better defensive situation or maybe some better game planning or just some, you know, growing up, I guess, if you're like a rookie's case, maybe things go better. And that's the thing that I'm really monitoring, is I'm drafting a whole lot of these guys that I believe in the talent. Maybe I believe a little bit in the defense getting better, and their left on base rate is bad. So that's like a, you don't have to list every guy off. It's really easy to pull yourself. It's like on FanGraphs, it's pretty easy to find. And you know, you can go find that new darling of yours pretty easily. Yeah,
okay, I want to do two things quickly before we move on to our next like regression-y topic and idea. I'm going to give you what Steamer has for Nola and Ray for their left on base percentages for next year. And I want you to tell me, I'll actually give you their 2021 number and Steamer's projection. And you tell me what story you think that tells.
Sure.
So for Nola, let me just make sure I'm actually on Nola's page here. Aaron Nola, I am on the right page. his left on base percentage for 2021 was 66.8. Steamer has him next year at 74.4.
Yeah, that's like pretty much league average. I would take the over. I think that he could be above 75%. He's the
what
sort
does
of guy.
It mean for his performance? Like, so if I'm looking at him in a 5x5, where is that? If he does, let's say he hits 76, nice, right? Like a 10% improvement. What does that mean in terms of like? And you can obviously go and see the Steamer projection for ERA is 3.57, but like, is it have an impact anywhere else, or is it just kind of a number?
I mean, it obviously brings on his whip. This is the sort of thing where it's like, I think he is a good candidate relative to the field to beat his projections because his... Now, Steamer's smart enough here to not just take his ERA from last year, but like, I think that he could do better than that. And further, I think there are going to be a lot of people who are going to be scared off of him, so he doesn't even have to beat his projections by all that much.
Yeah, because of where he's going to go.
Exactly. And those are the sorts of guys where you can find the scared opposition, or like, you can unscare yourself.
Yeah, sure.
And that
okay.
might be all it takes.
I'm going to give you Ray's numbers because they're a little bit more dramatic. And again, this is a projection. And I do think that Steamer likes to kind of start at the average and then make some changes from there. So I think this makes some sense in terms of what they're projecting. I don't know how you feel in terms of what Ray's potential is to outperform this. But so last year, left on base percentage, 90.1. Steamer's projection for next year, 76.4. That's a significant difference.
Yeah, it is. And again, he's the sort of guy that we would probably want to bet the over on. He's headed to Seattle now, right? I'm not crazy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I don't think of Toronto as like the literal greatest defensive team ever, and he had some yucky parks there for a minute. So I don't know. I think that's about right. It's not insane to guess the over, but again, like, I think that for both of these guys, they're guys I would pin down at around 76%.
So, I mean,
that's as aggressive as I'd go.
Almost 15% drop. I feel like that's going to have an impact.
Yeah, I will say another thing is that Ray had that really, really outlier crazy left on base rate, and he still had a bad home run rate. If the home runs come down and more of the guys who just get on base because of singles and doubles score, I mean, it's not going to wash out. But there are effects going in both directions there. That's the one thing I think that makes me think that he's not going to just like fall off a cliff, is that like, he had the season while still having some warts. And, you know, as long as we're not crazy, like mid low threes is not out of the question if we generally believe in Seattle to keep things up.
All right. One more thing, and then I'm moving off Robbie Ray, but it's not about left on base percentage. It's about where he's going. I'm going to give you some names, and I'm going to give you their ADP. I looked this up today, again, Monday, January 10th, and this is also something that I tweeted out. We've got Nola going 41.5, Ray 45.8, Sale 51, Peralta 56.7, and Webb 57. Of those guys, who is giving you the best value? Because it, honestly, if you're picking right there, not all those names are coming back to you. So if you're deciding between that crop of pitchers, Nola, Ray, Sale, Peralta, Webb, who's your guy?
I mean, it's Sale. I put it this way. You're not going to finish in the middle of the pack as often. I think you're taking Sale there. And I like that. I really like Peralta, though, if you're not in that case. Like, he just sparkles in terms of all of the under-the-hood stuff. He wasn't just striking people out. He was also inducing a lot of soft contact. Like, just everything you'd want to see for sustainability. I also really like the fact that he's going to play again in front of a really good defense. Like, everything is conspiring there to make him the sort of guy that can repeat what he did. Like, nothing about his success looked fake. So I really like him. You know, there's a lot of good choices there in the 50s. There's a couple guys in there that I would consider having around my top 10. And often the top 10 pitchers are usually gone by what, like mid 30s? So like, that's some good value. I'm interested to see how that all shakes out.
Well, yeah, I mean, ADP is obviously going to change as draft seasons kick into higher gear. And a lot of that's driven too by very format specific leagues that are being drafted on NFBC right now. But anyway, it's interesting to consider, you know, if you're talking about Nola and Ray, and we have now ad nauseum, they're going not that far apart from one another. So who's your horse? You know, who do you believe in more coming from opposite sides of this left on base percentage issue? I don't know. I just thought it kind of all ties it into a nice bow. What are some other elements of regression that we should be looking for as we're ramping up our 2022 draft season prep?
So we talked a bit there about you know, people being on base and how fluky that is, how little control you have over that as a pitcher, you know, kind of what happens once they're already there. And the stat that I've been keeping track of for a while has been, I guess it's kind of two stats together, and that's line drive rate and sweet spot rate. And this is much more for hitters, I don't want to admit, but definitely can be a thing to watch out for pitchers as well. The basic idea is this: it's really, really hard to hit a round ball with a round bat.
Yeah.
And that means it's really, really hard to reliably hit it at the same sort of like launch angle. So the fact that we talk about average launch angle is really funny to me, because like, it doesn't actually make sense. Like, you're not hitting it there very often. People's like spray distributions are wild. So like, instead of talking about it that way, it's smarter to talk about it like ground ball, line drive, fly ball, and I guess pop up. Yeah. And how often you're in all those things.
Right.
Right. And it's just really, really hard to sustainably hit line drives is the whole point. Sweet spot rate kind of takes line drive rate and some other stuff and kind of like adds some more caveats, but like also takes them away. I think it's slightly bigger. It's slightly bigger than line drive rate. So it's like also includes some like really nice primo fly balls. So I guess it's not fancier. It's just like a slightly different distribution. But both of them are like the stuff you want to hit. The expected batting average on these things is like 500. Your ex-woba on these things is like 700. This is the contact you want to make almost regardless of how hard you're hitting it. Hard hit line drives, hard hit sweet spot balls. Those are like hard hit sweet spot is pretty much barrel, but can be lower. Like, this is the good stuff, right?
Refresh my memory. EV involved in at all in line drive rate?
No, it's not. It's not for either of these. It's just angle. And again, round ball, round bat, you don't have a lot of control over that. That didn't mean to rhyme, but I guess it does. So there's like a
we'll
couple
put it
guys.
On a t-shirt.
Yeah, there's a couple of guys who have sustainably shown themselves to be a little bit better than average. Like, Freddie Freeman is like really good at hitting baseballs. He usually has a slightly higher than line drive rate than average, and that means he's like close to 30 rather than in like the mid 20s line drive rate. So this is a stat that matters a whole lot and is not sticky. That is exactly what you're looking for when you're trying to find who's going to regress. Now, the nice thing about this is you don't have to like do savant search to pull this. You can go to the Statcast like leaderboards and like pull a custom leaderboard where you just click on line drive rate and sweet spot rate, and you can find those outliers. It is so nice. So I'm going to pull today like a 200 minimum PA qualifier, and I'll update that real quick. And I'm just going to, like, from the top of the line drive rate, you can find some guys that you should be a little bit scared that aren't necessarily going to be able to keep things up. And it's really interesting. Like, you go and pull that. It's guys like Adam Frazier were really, really high on their line drive rate last year. Of course they were. Have you seen his batting average? It's insane. Miles Straw, by the way, you find some slap hitters in here. I just want to be honest. Like, you might find a couple of those guys. But again, I'm not necessarily betting the over on Miles Straw. Nick Castellanos is really high up here as well. He's kind of, again, in that sort of, is he really good at hitting baseballs or did he get lucky? He was definitely lucky this year for a while. He was like batting 350 for a while with the Reds for the first couple of months. Just he and Winker just mutilating opposition while the rest of the lineup is just asleep. So these are guys you should be a little bit wary of. But, you know, once you're beyond like 27, 28, it's not that big a deal. So for someone like Frazier to be at like 31, that's bad. Pulling that for sweet spot rate, you can find some other guys that are like way higher than you think they would be. Nick Castellanos is there. Kyle Tucker is there a little bit. He's at 42%. And this is, again, I've got like a leaderboard with like 200 is the minimum PA qualifier. So you got 360 people. So the top 15 or so are the guys you're like really worried about. Joey Votto, 44%. That's just wildly unsustainable. But he was just crazy smoking the ball, and you have to be thinking that stuff's kind of related. So these are guys, like, again, pretty easy to pull it, pretty easy to like have some questions, just asking questions here, sort of vibes.
How can I maybe take line drive rate and see if, and not just assume that if it's over 27%, like, I know that you said that like it's not necessarily a skill. I get that. And I have to imagine that even though exit velocity and hard hit rate is not calculated into line drives, when you're hitting the ball harder, you're going to get certain angles, right?
I mean, you've got the other way around, actually. When you're hitting it at certain angles, you're more likely to be getting all of the juice out of your swing, and it might actually be inflating how hard you're hitting it.
Okay, so like you have your nifty like hard hit per PA tool, right? Mm-hmm. Is that something you have handy that you can just click up real quick?
It doesn't take me that long.
I just want you to look at Castellanos and tell me, again, this is I'm not being critical of any of this. I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense. I think that the math holds true. And I think that sometimes there might be those guys, like we were saying with left on base percentage and BABIP. Like there are, like a Freddie Freeman, who's, because he seems to be doing it every year, at some point you have to kind of say maybe he is just a little bit better at with his swing plane, or he sees the ball a little bit better, because Castellanos, he didn't strike out a ton, which I know those don't seem like they're correlated, but you know, somebody who is just kind of freewheel swinging around, right? You think would probably strike out a lot more. So I don't know. What did you find? Did you find your thing?
So I have that up like as like a default search in my tab is what I say. Like I have it bookmarked.
Okay, good.
I haven't cheated.
I was talking a little bit to try and give you some time there.
Oh, you're good. Yeah, no, I have it bookmarked. yeah, actually, I pulled up. You brought up Freddie Freeman, and I want to say like, you can think comparably about this sort of stuff is the same way we all kind of have to wrap our heads around Kyle Hendricks. Do we believe that we can bet on people to be the next Kyle Hendricks? No, that's irresponsible.
Sure, right.
Like, he beats all of these estimators every year until he doesn't, right? It's kind of like the thing with. And, like, for someone like Freddie Freeman, like, he had a career low sweet spot rate last year at 37%. The average for this stuff is like 32.9%. Like, this dude is reliably beating it. One of the ways you beat that, yes, is going to be by having a swing plane that's more adjusted for it. You're also going to be able to do it by having a good eye. Guys like Omar Narvaez also show up really high on these sorts of things, and he's kind of like the key to mentally unlocking this for me, and that he relies on like a low power B swing sometimes, where it's like he's really good at the two strike approach.
Gotcha.
And like, yep. Some of those guys I think might show up more. You can flip it all ahead, who never swings like they have two strikes. Those guys are going to be a little worse, but at some point, if you're dramatically out of line, especially with your career averages, is I think a really easy way to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
If out of nowhere, Miles Straw is suddenly 10 points higher than he's ever been in this, you're betting for regression. And that's the sort of like, this is a number where you pull the whole leaderboard, you find the guys that are out of whack, you go do just a tiny bit more. Has he done this before? Am I willing to buy into it a little bit? Maybe you can you talk yourself into it. But, you know, like for Freddie Freeman, even, you know, at some point, things come back under earth for him. Like this past year, he had a pretty good year, mind you. It's 25% line drive rate, which is pretty much league average. 32% career. I want to note his monster 2020, he was at a 40% line drive rate. If you were betting on him to repeat last year and you like bought him at like the peak on the draft day, I don't think you got back full value from him last year. He still had a good year, but like 31 home runs, 200 combined RBI, and like a 300 batting average is still pretty good, actually. Dang. Yeah, he didn't have to be his best self to still be good. So that's, oh God, Freddie Freeman's so good. Someone should pay him a lot of money, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think
to
for
be
hitters,
continued on that. Yeah.
For hitters, I think, like, it's definitely one of those cases where, like, if I remember, I think it was, I'm trying to remember who it was. Was that Max? Yeah, it was Max Bay. Now gone to the Astros, pulled some of these charts a few months ago. And he's like, what's the year-to-year correlation on these things? And it was like 0.0, basically. It's like, aside from the super outliers, this stuff just doesn't repeat. And that's the sort of like stuff that you're looking for to make you reliable. Say, okay, if someone's way out of line, you got to really be doing some gymnastics to think that it's for real.
So then let's flip that around for a minute. Then if you're saying, does that mean that maybe then Nick Castellanos' hard hit per PA is going to come down because he's going to hit fewer line drives, so he's going to square it up less often?
Yeah, that's not crazy. Like, I think that he's the sort of guy where you have to be just a little bit concerned that even the raw power numbers are going to come down a little bit. And I have to imagine you bake a little bit of that in. But, like, for example, his sweet spot rate last year, 44. Again, that's 12 points above league average. That is ridiculous. And yeah, I mean, he's really unlocking some stuff, but again, like, this is a guy who, you, even if he's been doing this reliably, like, there's still some career elements in there. I do think that Nick Castellanos is the sort of archetype of, he's shown it, I'm willing to buy it a little bit, but like maybe not that much all the time. Not bring it down a notch or two is kind of my thought for him. Is like, I'll bet him to be in the 75th percentile, but I wouldn't bet him to be in the 90th. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Whereas, like,
no,
for strikeout
sure.
guys, you bet on it.
He's
like,
going to be good, but he might not be quite as good as he was.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That's fair enough. I want to hit you with three kind of rapid fire questions. And we're going to try and answer them here inside 10 minutes. Okay. And if inside five, that's fine too. And it kind of, I think, brings this whole discussion maybe to a conclusion. How can I tell the difference between an outlier and a breakout?
I want skills growth in a breakout. The things that we call skills are like pretty specifically like how often do you strike people out or strike out. That is gonna be reliable really quickly. Same for walk stuff. The ability to show a whole new level of power where you previously have had contact. That's impressive. So it's like, I think of guys like Kyle Tucker broke out this year. He was a little bit lucky in some ways, but he also struck out considerably less. Like, that's skills growth. It's a breakout.
Right.
I should also say, just a sidebar for Kyle Tucker, I know he was one of the top of like the line drive stuff. He was also super unlucky in terms of balls in play for line drives and other hard hit balls. Like, he had like luck going in both directions. He's just good. But those are the sort of things where, like, if you want to know, those are the sort of things I'm sprinting to first, the most reliable stuff first. And that's actually why I like things like hard contact rate, hard hit per PA. I'm trying to rebrand it there. We'll see if that happens. Probably won't. But yeah, like if a pitcher is reliably generating soft contact, it takes like a couple hundred PA to get that. But eventually we can see that's different from like, this guy's successful because nobody's hitting line drives against him and nobody's scoring once they reach base. One of those is skills, and one of those is John Means. no-hitter.
Or one of them could be it's 6 weeks into the season and they haven't played in the toughest competition in the league.
Right.
All right, I'm going to ask you another question that's the flip of that, and I'm going to guess the answer is going to be the same, but I'm still going to ask it. And that is, how can I tell the difference between an off year and an actual decline in skills?
Okay.
Like Rizzo. Is Rizzo washed? How do we know?
Man, that's a fun question that I would really like for like teams to pay me money or something like that to tell them. Okay. Yeah, I mean, part of that's definitely skills step, like decline. And you know, the places that we typically see people decline as they get older are going to be in like that bat speed sort of thing where you start to strike out just a little bit more every year. So you notice that Mike Trout's strikeout rate has just gone up a little bit year over year. He's also changed his approach though. So like those are the things you kind of gotta be a little bit wary of. But like let's look at Rizzo. Why not? So yeah, strikeout rate looks pretty remarkably similar. At the lowest it was 12%. He's now at like 15. He walked less, probably a little bit less approach. But yeah, there's like some interesting questions here. It's like the max exit velocity, basically the same as ever was. So is he hitting the ball as hard as often? Doesn't seem like that's the problem. And then you go into things like,
well, max,
his line drive rate.
To be
rate
fair, max
cratered.
Only has to happen once, right?
Right, but
so
you think
frequency
yourself,
could be less, but right, I'm just being a little bit of a nitpicker there.
Right, what he's capable of seems
sure.
like it hasn't changed much.
It's not like his arms cannot swing a bat and hit a ball that fast anymore. They still can do it because they did it at least once.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, there are some legitimate questions about whether or not we should care about max velocity as much as we seem to, but I'm at least willing to say, like, look, he had a ball 115 miles an hour. He hadn't done that before in his career. In the StatCast era. Yeah. I think
we use that one because average is so deeply flawed.
Yeah.
That it's the only other one we got to work with, especially when you're talking about people like Stanton and Judge and people who hit the ball really hard, you can sort of see maybe a decline there if they've lost 3 or 4 miles an hour over the course of a couple of years. But yeah, you're right. How hard you hit a ball does matter. How we quantify that is problematic.
Yeah. Anyways, I'm willing to say that it's not clear that he was like nursing a terrible injury sapping his power all year. At least I'm like saying he didn't do that the entire year. But then you look at things like his sweet spot rate, 31.4%, significantly lower than it had been at any season since 2016. And yeah, so he'd been sitting in like the mid 30s, above 36% or so for a couple years, and then it drops 3%. His line drive rate, he'd been sitting in the 29s range down to 24. So yeah, if you're thinking like a good portion of his contact is suddenly just a little bit worse because of a little bit worse luck, or maybe his pathway to decline is like instead of striking out, he's just making less good contact. Maybe you can tell yourself that, but it doesn't typically look that way. So yeah, I looking at this, I'm actually kind of interested in Rizzo. I'm very interested to see who's going to take a punt on him and like where he lands, because I don't think he's like washed or anything. The other side of things is like, how great has he been in the past couple of years? Pretty good. Like, he was still had a 339 WOBA this year. That's not bad. Like, he wasn't washed. It's just like some things broke poorly
it's
for
contextual,
him.
Right?
I would love to know what his left on base rate. Or like the left on base, you know what I mean? Like how long was he coming up with people in front of him? That's a really interesting thing I can't quantify. You know, it's like both of these stats we pulled up, there's probably a good way to turn them around. You can pull up sweet spot rate and line drive rate for pitchers. And like you look at the top and the bottom of those leaderboards and there are some interesting names in both directions. Mm-hmm. Everything here still works. Like Lucas Giolito, 37% sweet spot rate this year. That's definitely not going to happen again. The dude's definitely going to be better, whereas you see at the very bottom Walker Buehler, who didn't actually have that great of numbers, definitely one of the best sweet spot rates this year. So maybe his ability is that he can generate awkward contact, but he's still giving up a lot of hard awkward contact. It's confusing.
Yeah,
you know, guys
right.
like Max Fried also live in that realm. Can you sustain it? Maybe. But those are actually a lot of the guys that I'm kind of like down on are the guys who are really, really, really low sweet spot and line drive rates as pitchers last year. So that's the thing that I'm kind of like gonna continue to look for and I should probably write about. But it's not too hard to go like grab some of these lists yourself. And that's kind of what I hope we do on our best days is we make it really easy for someone else to do it for us.
Right. That's hopefully what our listeners are doing, is hearing, oh, that's what they did, and I'm going to go do that myself. Fangraphs and Savant, they can be very overwhelming if you haven't done it, but you do learn by doing and by listening and by trying. Okay, I want you to give me your top three stats that are lucky for hitters.
For hitters, yeah. So I'm going to say the things that I like to look for. I like to look at line drive rate, the sweet spot rate, basically interchangeable. I'm going to give those one spot together. Okay. A thing I really like to pull on Savant, like whenever I have the time, is I like to go pull the WOBA minus X WOBA for hard hit balls and then also for line drives separately. So it's basically you go check out how good defense had been against players when they were doing things well. Last year, I found some really interesting stuff on Tommy Pham about a month into the season when he was getting dropped by some people that he'd just been really unlucky. I picked him up. He was really good for a couple months. He had a somewhat poor end of the year, but like he was playing well. The results weren't coming, and then suddenly they were. Same thing happened for Kyle Tucker. That's a really, really fun stat to pull in season to kind of find the guys who shouldn't have been dropped but were.
We'll circle back to that for sure. Make a note. Put that down somewhere. Write it on your wall.
That's like similar to like WOBA minus X WOBA. And obviously the same idea goes there. I just want to make sure I'm pulling it specifically on like, you know, the they did a good at bat sort of stuff. Are like good process, bad results, because that's a really fun thing to pull.
Okay. And then if one more lucky stat.
If I need to have honestly, games played, if we're going to be honest with ourselves. I don't have a good last response there, but, you know, we'll definitely talk in the future
a little bit more. With BABIP there. I'm surprised.
That's what BABIP's kind of getting captured in the other thing else, you know? And sure. The second thing is like basically my BABIP version. It's like, I want to see how many line drives are hitting gloves.
Fair.
Yeah,
that's fair.
So that's what I'm thinking about.
Top three skills-based stats for hitters, and then we're going to bring this episode to a conclusion.
Strikeout rate, walk rate, and then I would choose hard contact rate because it's so quickly reliable, hard hit per PA. I'm trying to, again, call it that because it sounds nicer off the tongue. But yeah, basically, I want strikeout rate, walk rate, and then a contact stat, and in that order. Probably.
All right. Well, hopefully that was a lot of actionable information in this episode, and you can go ahead and look at those pages and look at those specific stats and sort them and click them, and reach out to us if you have any questions. Happy to answer to my ability, and when I can't, then to forward you on to Alexander, or you could go straight to him. That's always an option. You can email us dugoutstudyhall@gmail.com. And that's going to bring us to the end of the episode, Alexander. Thank you for sitting through this one with me, and welcome back after our hiatus being apart last time with Clegg. He was disappointed, so we're going to have him back on when the two of you can go ham on some stats.
Yeah, it was good to hear y'all. We also, like, it's been weird. Like, we had our Ted Lasso episode before that, so we haven't talked baseball in a hot minute. I know I had some people asked to talk more about the article I wrote about hard contact rate and like how hitters move in percentiles. And I will say, I'm sure we'll talk about some of that, probably sprinkle them wherever else. In the aftermath of that, I've had some people kind of like ask me to like run some StatCast queries or ask, like, hey, like, what's this number look like for these things? I do have like this nice tool that comes out of that where you can kind of pull like a pie chart for every hitter, where it'll tell you how often they struck out, walked, or hit by a pitch, hit the ball hard or hit the ball soft in this nice pie chart form that also compares it against like the average of the people who actually play instead of like league average that involves pitchers. So there's some fun tools in there where you can pull a lot of this data yourself, and it's really undaunting. And I'm trying to make sure I can, like, anything I use listed at least somewhere so you can also find it. So if you want to find some of these things I'm quoting and it's like something you have to run a StatQuest query for, it might actually be in like the Tableau that comes off that article. It should be really easy to like bookmark or just like go back to whenever you want and pull it yourself.
Why don't you make sure I have the right one, send it to me, and we'll put that link in our show notes for this episode as well.
Absolutely.
So people can find that. All right. Well, like I said, good to have you back. Thanks for doing another one of these silly Dugout Study Hall episodes with me. And if you could just let the people go ahead and know where they can find us.
Well, they can find you on Twitter at TheCorkedMatt.
I'm on Twitter at @chase_rate. And most importantly, you can find our podcast on Twitter at Dugout Study Hall, where you can send us some questions. Please be sure to subscribe to the Pitcherlist podcast feed if you haven't done that already. Leave us a good review if you can be so kind. And if you're not already, please consider becoming a PL Plus member so that you can harass us on the PL Discord. And that's it for me.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you next time.